Okay, good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Howard.
Hi. I'm Howard Dyckman, president of the San Diego District of ZOA. It's really nice to see such a large crowd here. Come to hear Rafa Elisigo. Before I introduce her, I just want to say a few words about the ZOA. ZOA is the oldest Israel-related organization in the U.S., founded in 1897. during the years of the early Oslo Accords, we made a point of pointing out the Palestinian violations. We are opposed to a Palestinian state. We're opposed to the two-state solution. We were opposed to the so-called disengagement from Gaza. And now we are concerned about things that are happening and working hard to counteract all the bad things that are being said and to make sure that Israel keeps Judea and Samaria. We have a campus division where we send around lecturers on campuses. We have the ZOA Center for Law and Justice, which assists victims of terrorism, files lawsuits against money, including money the Palestinian Authority has in various places that should go toward terror victims. And also the ZOA has worked on harassment of Jewish students on campuses, particularly UC Irvine. The Wall Street Journal considers the Zionist Organization of America to be the most credible advocate for Israel on the American Jewish scene today. Now, we have some literature up on this table, which you can take later. If you haven't put your name on the sheet in order to be notified about future events, please do so. There are two clipboards going around. And also, Rafaela Siegel will... I will give her information because she wants to be able to keep in contact with people, too. And we also encourage people to join the ZOA, and there are forms on that table also. Now I would like to introduce our speaker. Rafaela Siegel was born in South Africa, and she came to the U.S. as a young child.
To
Israel as a young child. she is a founding member of Kedumim, which was one of the very first settlements in the Shomron, Samaria, Judea and Samaria. She is now assistant mayor of Kedumim, and she has been here several times and spoken to groups here several times about Kedumim, and we're very, very happy and fortunate to have her back. She's an optometrist, and she has 9 children, and I don't know how many grandchildren.
I will tell.
Okay. Anyhow, it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Rafaela Siegel.
Thank you very much. I want to thank first Howard Dyckman for his great effort to bring us all together here. It's a wonderful crowd and in the middle of the week. I really appreciate it. I want to thank Rabbi Lieder that we are in his Chabad Center. Both organizations, the ZOA and the Chabad, are the most loyal organizations, lovers of Israel, activists for Israel, and we really appreciate it. We feel very close, and we know what good work you are doing. And I want to introduce my friend Shoshana Shiloh, who is coming with me to the United States. She's working in the office directly with the mayor of Kedumim, assistant to him, assistant to the mayor. And we both together try to bring the voices of the community. She's mother of 4, grandmother, former lieutenant in the Israeli army. Okay, so I came here from Kedumim on a very special day, I showed before a clip of Yerushalayim. I hope all of us remember that we today are celebrating Yom Yerushalayim, the day of Yerushalayim. 41 years that we have the whole of Yerushalayim and Yehuda in Shomron after the Six-Day War. An exciting day, a most exciting day. We just celebrated Yom Ha'atzmaut a few weeks ago. 61 years ago, we established a state with physical borders. In the Six-Day War, we managed to bring under our control those areas that are biblical, those areas that represent our connection to the state, and the Six-Day War changed everything and pour in the physical borders a spiritual dimension. Unfortunately, now, after what I'm telling you, 41 years in these areas, we are hearing disturbing plans. We are already a few years in a very difficult period since Oslo. After the experience of Oslo, the concessions, the terror, getting worse and worse, and Gaza experience, still speaking about two-state solution as if nothing has changed. I came here to speak about the number one issue that you hear in every discussion, in the media, meetings between leaders, the settlement issue. This became the number one issue. Some people say that we are the obstacle to peace. I want to show you today that we are an obstacle to a Palestinian state. So, and I will tell the story through our life in Kedumim, how really this is the truth. I see here some familiar faces that heard me about 9 years ago about Kedumim. I see new faces here. I want to assure you, those that heard me will hear updates. Those that didn't hear me will have a new revelation about this issue. Kedumim is the first community that was established in the Shomron, a community that represents heroism, self-sacrifice, and Zionistic spirit. This is the community that opened the way to Jewish life in the Shomron. So I would like to point out to you, this is the map, I brought you Israel, I brought Kedumim, everything here in order to illustrate the issue. This is the map of Eretz Israel, and here is Kedumim in the center. The width of Israel from the Mediterranean to Jordan Valley, 50 miles. Kedumim on the hills. And I want to show, Shana will show you another map, very important map, the former Green Line, just to see the two maps here. This is Tel Aviv, Netanya, Kedumim is here. Kedumim. From this point, when we stand on the hills, we can look to the east. We see the hills of Shechem, Nablus, Shechem, the two hills. This is it. Here, this we see from Kedumim, Eival and Gerizim. When we look to the west, to the east, from to the west, from the same spot, we can see the buildings of Tel Aviv. On clear days, the sea from this spot. Can you imagine how strategic we are in the center of Israel? I want to tell you the story, my personal story. What made me, a young married woman with three little kids, as you mentioned, I have now 9 kids, 8 married, 21 grandchildren, as a beginning. What made me, a young couple, living in an established neighborhood in Tel Aviv, my husband in high-tech, I'm an optometrist in the hospital in Israel, move to Tel Aviv, to the barren hills of the Shomron. It is connected to the day that we hear today, the Six-Day War. That was the turning point of my life, in which we remember how Israel was vulnerable, almost annihilated. On the extreme level later, the great joy, excitement as a result of the victory, as a result of the fact that we knew Israel was saved. But more than that, the excitement was, if I check it deeper, a result of the fact that we came back to these areas, to Beit Lechem, to East Jerusalem, the Kotel, Hebron, those places that is Eretz Israel. I joined a group that said it is not enough to hold these places and visit. This war had a message to us. What does it require from us? To move there, to live there, in order to retain these areas forever. So it's a long story of a great struggle. There was no government permission. We are prohibited to settle in these areas. So between 1973 and 1975, we came 7 times. And I'm making a long story short. Try to imagine every time people are coming, trying to settle with equipment in different locations. It was a whole organization, how to do it. Okay. 7 times we were evacuated. You can see here, maybe if you turn the light, you'll see better. This is an original clip from those days, from the 7 attempts, in which you can see how we came with a lot of supporters, with, this is what you see, a few of the attempts, with our children, every time evacuated, till 1975, the last attempt, in which so many people came, and there was such a growing debate in Israel, how come Jews cannot settle in their land? The government at that time, the Labor government, Rabin, Peres, couldn't resist the determination, and they gave us permission to stay in an army camp. That was a compromise, 30 families for a period. They said it is a temporary decision until Peres signing the contract. He regrets it till this day. This is the beginning of the life. They said, until they will decide what to do with us, but you can see, that was the beginning. That was the first time that Jews, after 2,000 years, got a permission to stay, and we started to build our lives from tents to trailers to, and many, many people came to help. I want to tell you, most of the people in Israel were sure this is a passing episode. We were, most of us professionals, had to keep our jobs. We didn't have anything, no facilities, no schools, no daycare centers, no stores, nothing. This is a school. But we were so happy that we managed to stay there and break the prohibition. And from that point, life began in the Shomron. We opened the Jewish life in the Shomron. Today, as a result of the few people that came, and I like to tell the story of the beginning, because this beginning of Kedumim proves to us how few people with determination make a revolution and change. And this helps us today. It helped us during 34 years with a lot of tests. The approach to do things without calculations. And I want to show you a map that you won't find, not in the New York Times, not in the CNN. You will find the map I showed you in the beginning, empty, nothing. With Jerusalem, Jenin, Ramallah. This one. This you will find in the New York Times. The territories, the West Bank. This is what we show, what we have today. 150 communities with 300,000 Jews, something you can't ignore. Normal life. No one can ignore this established area. Around Kedumim, we have thousands of Jews on the roads. We are a majority of Jews between Shechem and Kfar Saba. Thousands. So this map represents the great success that we have, the half cup, full cup. So I know that I'm speaking to a more supportive group, and I must tell you, as a result of the media, we found that even our friends don't know many facts. There are many misconceptions about what is a settlement, and we have to fight it. And I want to utilize, I will give you some tools to tell others in order to break this misconception about us. Number one, people think that we'll still live in tents, a camel, a tower, few Michiganers. This is what they think is a settlement today. So we're speaking about established communities like Gdumim, 5,000 people surrounded with many other communities, built houses like I find here, many of them, 12 neighborhoods. We have everything for everyday life, schools, high schools, medical center, cultural life, industry zone, and sports. You'll see soon everything through the pictures what we have. Some people think that we are the aggressive people that fight with the Arabs and the government the whole day long. This is the picture, the image, the stereotype. Before I'm speaking about that, I remember we have a very nice aerial photography that is very important to see how Gdumim grew from the tents. This is it. Here. Now, this is an old aerial photography. Since it was taken, it grew double. But just to show you, one community, Gdumim, how big it is. And it is here on this map, all the neighborhoods, including an outpost here with young couples. Those that you see here, up there, with 15 young couples that, again, went and continued the parents' way, more the pioneering style, as you see there. And these are the neighborhoods. And I started to say there are some stereotypes about the kind of people that live in our area. So we have a heterogeneous population of all kinds of people from different backgrounds, professionals, hardworking people, doctors, scholars, four generations, seniors, and young people. We have people from the whole world, a melting pot of people from Ethiopia, from North America, South America, 100 families from the former Soviet Union. We set an example of all kinds of people living together. Also from the traditional point of view. This is a music school that I'm proud to show you, especially because this is the lawyer from Cleveland, Dennis Seaman, activist of the ZOA too, whose sister is sitting here, and he built it on the memory of the father that was a klezmer. He fell in love in Gdumim, and he fell in love in Gdumim, and he wanted to commemorate his father by building a music school, and we have there 200 students, bands, activity, music, singing. So that's the senior center. So I mentioned the kind of people from the religious point of view, non-religious, religious, more committed, less. Everyone finds, is comfortable in this community. As you see, we have Ethiopian people. Another issue that people attack us a lot. They say, there's so many problems in Israel. You should focus in those problems, the social problems, the welfare problems, the educational problems. It is amazing to find that in Gdumim and other communities, it is the same. The same people that came to settle the land and find it as a most important thing are dealing with so many other issues that bother the Israeli society. And I mentioned few, Aliyah and non-religious, religious living together. But we have the school that we established, Bnei Chai School, 10 years ago for boys with ADD and ADHD, not for the sake of Kdumim only, serving the whole center of Israel. We have 104 boys. Most of them commute to the community. It began from our initiative without any help. It grew with great success. We have now the graduates that we meet. We have a whole graduation reunion, graduates. All of them go to the army, marry, have professions. Kids that were kicked from schools and became non-religious because of this whole situation. Thanks to the school that we established, this is what we have, and you will find the literature about this school. We're going to build the permanent construction. Married, these are the graduates, as I said to you. Another project, we have in our high school 150 Ethiopian girls from the whole country. It is already a project that we have more than 15 years. Girls from primitive broken homes that we have in our community, fully integrated in the school. Thanks to the school and our help, they graduate, remain religious girls, marry, go to colleges, have a profession, and go out of their primitive style. I gave you some examples. We have more. For instance, I want to show you the mayor of Kdumim. It is a new elected mayor. You know, in the past, Daniela Weiss was the mayor. We had elections. She wanted the second generation to take over. This is the mayor, Hananel Dorani, second generation of Kdumim, a colonel lieutenant in the army of Israel, fought in the war of Lebanon. This is his family. He represents another phenomenon in Kdumim, adopting kids from broken homes in Israel, abused families, Down syndrome. We have more than 20 families. He's one of them. This is Hananel Dorani, and in the war. So I gave you a kind of a description, feeling what is the community, what it is. The most problematic issue that we encounter in the past 3 years is the building restrictions. I don't know how much you heard about it, and now in the meetings, the most important thing, don't build, don't continue to build. So I want to tell you, for 3 years we're not allowed to build a house in the whole of Judea and Samaria, Gush Etzion, and places in Yerushalayim. Those that houses that were built in Ma'ale Adumim and Har Choma were plans from before 3 years. The number one problem of the Palestinians, which they reflected to the U.S. administration, we won't talk about peace or anything if the number one condition won't be implemented. Not to build. And I'll tell you why. Today we are 300,000 Jews in these communities. Easily, we can multiply easily without money. We don't need any financial help for building. There is a list in every community of those that want to join. And more than that, our second generation, we are all of us marrying off our kids. Five of my eight married kids live in the communities. They want to stay. This is a success. The Yesha Council made a survey that this year, out of the second generation of the communities, 2,100 young couples wanted to live in their homes where the parents, and they didn't find a place they had to live. So I want you to know that we can grow easily in a year or two to 400 and 500, half a million Jews, and the whole question of a Palestinian state is off. Easily. And this is why this is the number one condition not to build. And I'm sure, from what we learned from the promises of Benjamin Netanyahu, he has a problem what to do now, but he will start with the big communities, he's calling it natural growth, and this is how he will go out of it, because there's no way, we have to live. So this is the number one problem, and I want to show you how the creativity, again, of our people, what we did in order to bring some young couples that we had to. You can see in these pictures, we were not allowed to mobilize trailers. That was also a law, but we found a magic solution. We built them inside the community and connected it to electricity between the neighborhoods. And you can see here briefly how the Yiddish Kop, it's next to the music school in the parking lot. And this enabled us and many communities in the meantime to be less choked, to release the choke. And you can see houses and the trailers getting built. So I just wanted to share with you one of our problems. I want to share with you a more sad part of our life. As I told you, the beginning of Kudumim was followed with a pioneering spirit, with a lack of water, electricity. It wasn't easy. But the beginning of Kudumim with the pioneering difficulties became paradise if I compare to the terror and the waves of terror that is part of our life. And I can't ignore it. Part of our life was losing friends, and there were waves of this, and I'm not getting into the list of all those that were killed during the course of the past 15 years. We lost friends and kids on the ways. Just to mention the latest, 3 years ago in the entrance of Kudumim, a suicide bomber dressed like an Israeli entered a car on the route. Karnei Shomron, as I told you, Kudumim is surrounded by many communities. Thousands and thousands of Jews are commuting. He entered a car, and in the entrance of Kudumim, he activated the belt and killed four people. A couple from Kudumim, Rafi and Ilana Halevi, Reut Feldman, who was in national service in Kudumim, and Shaked Lasker. In a minute, tragedy. Can't get into the what happened in Kudumim. The feeling, the loss. A year and a half ago, a boy, second generation of Kudumim, married with two kids, drove from Karnei Shomron, very close to us, on the way past Kudumim. Him and his wife, second generation of Kudumim, he was shot to death. And I tell you when it was. You probably remember the convention in Annapolis when Olmert met Bush and Abu Mazen, a Palestinian policeman belonging to Abu Mazen, killed this guy, Ido Zoldan, who was an amazing boy. He was an officer in the Golani Brigade. He combined the Torah way of life, very religious. He was an officer in the Brigade of Golani, fought in Jenin, in the known big battle. He became a builder. He wanted to feel how it is to build Eretz Israel. And that is another loss of Kudumim. I'm not telling these stories only to share with you these grief issues, which is part of our life.
Did you get the Palestinian?
One was caught, the other one ran into Shechem, And as usual, they promised to catch him. This is the old story. One was caught. Palestinian policeman. In any case, I want to show you the reaction of our people. That is the main point. Didn't break us, didn't reduce the belief in our rights in the cause of settling the land. On the contrary, it made people stronger in the belief that we have to strengthen our roots. And especially, I want to speak about the second generation. We have an amazing second generation. This is our secret weapon. This is the reaction to the killing of their friends. They prepared a march along the route of the suicide bomber through the Palestinian villages with flags, with singing, dancing, showing we are not afraid. We are marching here. We are living here. We won't bend our heads. You can see this is in Funduk, where Ido Zoldan was killed. And this is a tradition every year on the day that they were killed. This is our kids, their initiative, their reaction. And I want to mention about the second generation of Gdumim. Most of our kids stay and live in the community, as I told you. This is a young couple who took a trailer and made it, you see, by themselves with wood around. Just an example. Most of them stay in the communities. They know how to combine ideology with career to find the balance and the proportions in life. Humble. Like I said, they go to a trailer. In the meantime, I can tell you, two of my daughters are professionals, doctors and a professor. Two of my kids are in high tech. Two are scholars. There's no contradiction to be a settler and to have a career and to do something for the nation. The most important thing, the boys of our community, a major amount go to the best combat units in the army, pilots, in the fighting combat units, officers. In the Lebanon War, 96 of them fought in the Lebanon War. 100 fought in Gaza. These are my number 7 and 8 sons. Mm-hmm. In the army, Itamar and that is Avner, both married. Avner, the one you saw.
Rega.
Yes. Rak, rega. Where is Avner? Then I will tell you about Avner. Now I'll show you Shoshana, also her kids in the army representing others, but we are here, so you can imagine. This is Odette and the daughter who went to the army. She was volunteering with Russian Jews, boys that she helped them to convert through the army. That was her duty. As I said, they go to the combat units, and the most impressing issue, many of them married with children, don't do 3 years, 5-6 years, like my son Avner, that is in he was in the Sayeret Matkal, if you know, it's the special unit. Now he's an officer next to Shechem. He fought in Gaza, sniper almost killed him, he had a great miracle. They are married with children. They come home once in 2 weeks. He sees his wife and his daughter once in 2 weeks. This is my granddaughter. He represents many young couples like that. And I want to tell you, the Israeli society knows it. In the Gaza war, the Lebanon war, it was very, very emphasized that these boys are the best, how they're fighting. This is Shoshana, eldest son. He's already married with 6 kids. And he went to the reserves, to Gaza, to fight in Gaza.
Rega, I'll show you.
Yes. Again? Here his kids came to him before he went into Gaza.
This is Rafaela's husband and
son. Okay, that's another picture. My husband and my son. They set an example in the army, religious boys that keep Shabbat. Once my son was stuck, he came home, I told you, once in 2 weeks. He came home for Shabbat, he has to have a telephone. In shul he got a call, quickly, back to the south, I don't know where. He came back 12 o'clock in the night, Motzei Shabbat. He said, 5 o'clock he has to leave, to go back to the army. So I said, what did you do? So he doesn't say what they did, it's an uncovered unit. But they finished their task, operation, in the middle of the night, Leil Shabbat. All the boys went home to have a good time, vacation. Shabbat, he doesn't move. He finished his duty because he's observant. He was the only one out of the unit that stayed there till the end of Shabbat. I'm speaking about a special sacrifice that they have, not seeing the family, keeping the rules of the tradition. And this is the example and what we have from the communities. Him and Yoni Netanel, first I'll speak about Aaron Karov, a boy from Kdumim that got married with a girl, and a day after the marriage went to the army, to the war in Gaza, and was severely wounded, so severely that the doctors didn't even give him a chance, and he's a walking miracle. They didn't believe he walk, they didn't believe he will talk. He just hasn't got a face. Slowly, slowly. That's the kind of people. And Yoni Netanel from Kdumim, married again with a child. In the Battle of Gaza, he was killed by friendly fire. This was an example of a family that accepted it, spoke in the media, elevated the spirit in Israel, continue to fight. We want to strengthen the unit that killed our son. So another example, and I want to show you, Ziona, his wife, spoke. We have a little clip. Just, this is the spirit of the communities, which I want you to carry and tell others.
אתמול הוא היה ממש חסר עוד יותר.
התחלתי
לנסוע מהבית על הקדומים כדי לעשות משהו, כדי לסדר את הבית לכבודו שהוא יחזור, כדי לתת לו הרגשה של בית. אבל לא כך, הקדוש ברוך הוא מחליט בשבילנו, ויום המוות כתוב מיום הלידה.
רק לפני פחות משנה נישאו סרן יוני נתנאל וציונה. לפני שלושה חודשים נולדה ביתה מעיין. יומיים לפני שנכנס לעזה, ציונה לא התאפקה יותר ונסה לפגוש אותו.
את הפגישה האחרונה שלנו, הבטיח שהוא לא יקרה לו שום דבר.
12 שעות לפני שנהרג, קיבלה ממנו ציונה איתות.
אתמול גם שלח הודעה שהכל בסדר ואין מה לדאוג ושהוא אוהב המון. שנתן נשיקות למעיין.
חבריו של יוני מתארים היום מפקד נערץ שהיה בעיקר גם חבר.
אומרים שהוא פשוט הקרין סביבו ביטחון, עוצמה ושמחה.
אנחנו נשתדל להישאר חזקים ולהמשיך הלאה. בשביל מעיין, בשביל כולם.
Short script to show you what is the issues that we on an everyday basis dealing and the strength too. The war of Gaza ended, but not really. You all know that they stopped it in the middle and they are getting ready for the second round. All the information, intelligence is giving the report of how they are building an army stronger, tunnels, through the tunnels, all the rockets, the missiles, anti-aircraft missiles. and they're learning the lesson how to deal with the next round. And here I want to I'm ending with a very important issue that I want to bring to you. And this is the main message I want you to get from this evening. Speaking about two states solution. We had two wars. What do we learn from these two wars about these two state solutions that everybody is speaking about? We did everything according to the theory that people expected from us for peace. We left Lebanon and Gaza to the last inch, no territorial dispute. High fences, everybody spoke about the fences, high fences in Gaza, high fences in Lebanon. No settlers, obstacle to peace, not in Gaza, not in Lebanon. These borders are more dangerous to Israel than where I'm living in Gdumim, next to Shechem. Why? And I'll tell you why. Because in our area, there's a relative quiet. I'm not saying here and there attempts. Relative quiet, thanks to one thing which makes a difference than Gaza and Lebanon. The presence of the army that is there changed its approach to an offensive approach since 2002 and ruined the infrastructure of the Palestinians. This army unit is close to Gdumim, using our facilities not to guard Gdumim, in order to go into Shechem, into Ramallah. And my son is dealing with this too. Every day, you can read in the internet, they catch four, two, detain them before they start to organize something. It's very easy to throw the mantra that every person, stupid person, is saying, the Pope and here and there, two-state solution. If every day a bus would have been blown in Tel Aviv, would someone say it? No. So why they can say it? Because of the quiet. There's a reason for the quiet. The presence of the army that is dealing with the beginning of terror every day. This is the reason. But the issue is even deeper, I can tell you. It is not only the army. It is the presence of the communities that wherever there is Jewish life, there is army. There's an equation in Zionism between security and Jewish life. And I haven't got the time to bring all the examples how it works. It is not that the army is somewhere and then Jews come and live. It's the opposite. We have one example is important. Two places in Israel have the same status. Hebron, with the graves of our forefathers, Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and the tomb of Joseph. According to Oslo, they have the same status. It's under our control, and we are allowed to go in. You can come to Hebron easily. You can go there, go out. Why? Because there's the army there. Why is the army there? Because 400 Jews are living there. You can't go to the tomb of Joseph today because the army left easily. The minute there was some difficulty, they left. No Jewish life, no reason to stay. And that's the same story with the Philadelphia route where we left and the army regrets it till this day through where they bring all the weapons because no Jews are there anymore. So this is a very important issue. This is the issue of the security of Israel, thanks to where we are. But it is not the main idea. It is not enough to speak only about security. I can speak the whole day and show how a Palestinian state is the most dangerous issue for Israel. But if I won't speak about our rights on the land, it is not enough. And the Palestinians, Abu Mazen said before the new of the talks, you need security, okay, but we need justice. Our mistake of the leaders was always to speak about the security. It's easy to explain. If we leave Yehuda and Shomron from Kdumim, they can throw a rocket. Every child knows that Azar story will repeat itself in our area. But we have to speak about our rights. The belief in our cause, it's not enough only security. And we just celebrated Yom Yerushalayim and Yom Atzmaut, which reminds us how Israel was found without anything, with all the difficulties, against all odds. Because two things. The founders had belief in the right and self-sacrifice. And this is what we have. And this is what will help us in the future, despite all the difficulties. So I want to give you the opportunity to ask questions. We have material here. We want you to come and visit, to be connected to us. You have all the information in the material. We need help for a few of the projects, either by you, either by friends, connect us to other places. We are not lazy to go from place to place in the next time. And
I want to mention a fella, she is volunteer, and I'm working with the mayor in the municipality, so every dollar, every donation is going straight to the community. We are not making any living, we are not living from it, and I want to mention it.
So Howard, is there time for questions?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Jewish audience, Jewish
rights
in that territory.
Your name?
Lena.
Lena asked, how can I explain to a non-Jewish audience the rights on the land? I want to tell you, I'm embarrassed to tell you, how many people from the Christian society understand much more than our fellow Jews the rights. I'm embarrassed to tell you. They know the history. They read the Bible. It's simple. No complications. But it's easy if you ask. It's very easy to explain it. To show the history where the forefathers were walking here. Abraham, Jacob, I'll tell you more than that. All the archaeological findings in Shechem, in our area, in Kdumim itself, are related to the different Jewish periods. Never there was a Palestinian people. So that you know.
Yeah.
Since the destruction of the temple, there was no independent entity there. Nations came, nations went, all kinds of empires were dominating. But you know, in the past, in Europe and in the United States, people used to curse Jews and said, Jew, go to Palestina. That's your land. What are you doing here? I mean, everyone knows
so
that...
So you would say, you know, quote the Bible or...
Okay. The Bible and the history. There were never other nations. Israel was desolate. Read... Mark Twain, who gave a description of what's going on in this land.
He gave that to the president.
That's very smart.
Yeah. The Mark Twain book is called Innocence Abroad.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
My question is, all of a sudden I got an email, something about Orthodox women who are getting abortions, and that we should be giving money to help the family because they're getting abortions because they can't afford any more children. Can you address that?
Listen, this is not something I'm connected to at all. I know that in Israel there's a big organization helping, and everyone knows about it. They publish themselves a lot, and they do a great job. It is called Efrat. They help anyone who, because of financial issues, can't have a child, they pay for it. I don't know about that group, but I'm telling you there's a solution for it. Send them to Efrat, to the organization that helps.
What do you think is going to happen with Iran, especially now that they launched a missile today that could hit Israel, God forbid? What is going to...
Listen.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Solid, liquid, doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
Listen, I'm not a prophet to say what will happen. I just can say we had once one Hitler who said something, who promised things. We didn't listen. The world didn't listen, didn't believe. We hear the new Hitler. The world must understand that they mean it. And something must be done quickly because it's the first threat is on Israel, but it is towards the whole world. So I believe that especially after today, that they really proved that they want to do it, something will be, take action. And the appeasement policy, I think, is wrong. And no connection between this and a Palestinian state. There's no, on the contrary, another Palestinian state, first of all, it is the borders of Auschwitz, as Abba Ibn called it, and that's it. We don't need the Iranian bomb. Few rockets to the Ben-Gurion airport and to Tel Aviv, it's enough. So it's an Iranian front line in Israel. So it should be treated immediately.
I have two questions, actually. How many Arabs are there left when you move to Shomron? How do we get the rest of them out?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, I'll tell you what. First of all, you know that Gaza is out of our control. So many times you hear numbers, and precisely including when they want to threat everybody, there's a demographic problem. So the leftists bring a big number, much higher than it is in reality, because they forgot that Israel is not responsible for Gaza, 1.5 million. In Judea and Samaria, there are some around 2 million. I'm not sure about the numbers.
Less even.
But it's not growing in the pace that everybody predicted. For many years, it is the same. The birth rate decreased. Many people left. They have a miserable life, not because of us, because of their brothers. I can tell you, before Oslo was signed, they had a wonderful life, which was ruined as a result of the Oslo Accords and their people. I personally believe that we don't have to speak about transfer. On the other hand, not to give political rights. Not to give political rights, and whoever is involved in terror should be deported or punished or something like that. Things that Israel didn't do enough. I mean, the essential things. And if we will bring easily 500,000, 700,000 Jews in Judea and Samaria, the numbers already become even somehow. So, as my friend is mentioning here, reminding me that the problem in Israel is not the Palestinian Arabs, it's the Israeli Arabs. That is a bomb. That is a real bomb.
Yeah.
A terrible bomb.
No one's figuring in the aftermath of the war that they want to have on Israel. All bets are wrong. When they start a war...
The fifth column, they did it already in the Lebanon war.
Cheered
is nothing. They blocked roads.
They throw stones. They almost killed the Jews.
They're enemies.
So that's a real problem. But for the Palestinians, we think to give them political rights that they never had, if they want, they actually belong to Jordan as a population, And all those that say two-state solution, I agree. There is a two-state solution, Israel and Jordan. And those Palestinians should choose if they want to move to Jordan or to stay in this area that, where they are, and vote for Jordan. Because this is the same people. If Jordan doesn't want to take them, it doesn't mean that we have to agree to give them political rights. That's we have to decide. I'll come to you too.
Yes? Two things. First, why don't we just put pork products on all the bullets and ordnance? And because, as you probably remember, Colonel Wallace did this and the German Tado left. Why don't we just learn and
good idea. I'll sell it to the army. Number two. No, I'm not. I would.
Second thing, why not look at what the reason for people to be ADD and ADHD is? That's mostly a leadership characteristic. It's not something detrimental. Only women teachers say that's a bad thing. ADD and ADHD, and some women are actually ADD also.
Okay, listen, we're not discussing the root of the problem. That will have an evening for the ADD.
It's a guy thing.
I'm just saying, we won't get into the issue. Maybe we have to do the research. In the meantime, we are helping those that have ADD in the society. I guess.
How many Israelis are for Palestinians? How many are for? Which party is for Palestinians? Which party is for? And then my question is this. Netanyahu made a statement he will vote to the President of the United States to find a vote. The President of the United States is for a Palestinian state. So will Netanyahu agree for a Palestinian state if Iran would agree to do away with the atomic bomb?
Oh. As I said, I'm not a prophet, but I will relate to a few of your questions. The gentleman asked how many people in Israel are for or against the Palestinian state. Polls are changing all the time, but the majority oppose the Palestinian state. The majority don't believe in peace. The elections that we had now prove that the people didn't want the policy of Olmert and Livni. The majority voted for Lieberman. It's 15 votes against the Palestinian state. The National Religious, the Ichud Alumi, the Likud Party, the list of the Likud is very right-wing, and thanks to them, Benny Begin and the former chief of staff, Bogi Yaalon, people voted more for the Likud because they expressed their views for a different policy. After what happened in Gaza, people realized that whatever is going on in Gaza will repeat itself in Judea and Samaria, and this is a direct threat on them. Some people, the Labor Party supports it. The Kadima Party supports it. Ehud Olmert sat with Abu Mazen, and believe me, he wanted to have a deal to have a legacy. Even him that gave 98%, that gave almost all Yerushalayim, that spoke about a passage, extraterritorial passage between Gaza and Jericho, and numbers of refugees, didn't manage to come to a deal with the Palestinians. So if he didn't, what do you expect, that Netanyahu will give more? His whole life, he spoke about the danger of the Palestinian state. And he won't, I believe, there's a time that he should stand and say, no, it is an existential issue for Israel. And the fact that despite all the atmosphere and media pressing him to say two-state solution, two-state, he didn't say it. This is showing you, to his credit, that he wants to avoid it. He's speaking about economical issues. He has to find the tactical way how to go out of it. We are concerned about Benjamin Netanyahu. We had some bad experiences about him in the past.
Moshe Feigler.
Of course we have. And very disturbing signs, sending Paris, etc. But you know what is happening with Benjamin Netanyahu in his second term of office? He's dealing with the most existential issues, because it's life or death. It's to exist or not.
Exactly.
Therefore, he should, as a leader of Israel, he has such responsibility that he can't agree to these pressures. That's all. Yes.
Is there any movement in Israel to change the education system for anybody living within Israel to be uniformly educated, to become to become a citizen of Israel? Why is it that nobody has changed these Arab students' school books and forced, if they're living within Israel's borders, to go in and say, in order to live within Israel's borders, you have got to be educated according to these books, and alter the education system for all students in Israel.
She's what?
The secular education should be uniform for all students in Israel, and at least they should learn what history is, they should learn the facts, they should learn the things that are part of becoming a citizen of Israel. Whether they vote or they don't vote, whatever it is, whether they become, like you said, political, at least they need to be able to become a part of the country. Since 67, it should have happened immediately. It didn't, and it's
and
still not
too late.
The outcome
is what we see.
The outcome is what we see. And there's a man here who was a Palestinian terrorist who I think is in the San Diego area, Walid Shufat. And I heard him once speak, and he said he blames Israel for his rotten education.
And everything you said, I agree. Mm-hmm. We have the same criticism.
Is there a movement to change this?
Yes, there are some members of Knesset, new ones now, that their bills are to change and reverse the books.
Right.
Revise
the
books.
They have to get rid of the education.
Yes.
Their kids are
taught
to hate right within Israel's
borders.
But
that's a real problem. And the secular education in Israel that doesn't give tools to our kids to understand what Israel is meaning to them, why they have to fight for Israel, and so on. You're right. Everything you said. Yes.
You've done a wonderful job. Is anything I want to compliment you on the information you've given us?
Thank you.
I respectfully would say, though, that the Jews, as smart as we are, we're losing the Hasbara war. Everybody has got to stop using the term settler. Start using residents.
Communities. Communities.
Well, for settlements, communities or cities, instead of giving us this impression of temporary usurpers, we have to give the impression that we belong there and that that we're permanent. So the language has to change in all the discussion.
Nahon.
Did you hear what Barak said today? Barak said we are going to use force to remove every illegal settlement on the West Bank. Don't worry, we will not allow any illegal settlements. Now, that's not America, that's Barak.
Let's see. Wait. You're right. We have a very interesting government. So, Netanyahu is the prime minister. He has Barak with a very extreme approach, Ministry of Defense, which is dealing instead of defense with the politics of the communities, and Peres as a president who is dealing with policies, and not as a president, he has to visit wounded soldiers and so on. So it's very complicated. We agree. We have our criticism.
How many Israeli citizens refuse to go into a settlement, will not go to visit friends of theirs who live in settlements because they feel they're illegal?
There are leftists, but I want to tell you, the left, extreme left, is a minor section in Israel, but they have a lot of influence. They dominate the media, they are in the court, they are in the political establishment, they are molding the public opinion, while when I go around and meet people, it is so different. They lack a lot of information. There's a lot of negative influence. And people, as you heard, the stereotype of people like us as if we are ruining the peace and so on. And we are trying to change it, but it's very difficult to access the media.
You see, that fellow had a great idea. Quit referring to yourselves as settlers. And don't use settlers.
I'll tell you what. It's a long story. In English, a settler is a negative word. In Hebrew, litnachel is to inherit the land.
Okay.
It is a positive word,
okay,
which the leftists made it negative. Those that inherit the land are religious, are fundamentalists. I'm not...
Don't translate it as settler.
Yeah.
I know.
But not for American audiences or
yes,
English-speaking audiences.
I usually call it communities.
That's much better. And
yes,
in Israel,
yes,
Barak,
yes,
should use that.
Why is it that the Israeli Arabs are still given the opportunity not to fight the military? If they're going to be citizens of Israel...
They can. They do.
I know, but it's optional for them, whereas it's mandatory for everybody else.
It's optional. The Bedouins and the Druzim go. Some Arabs go. And there's now a new bill coming in, national service for their society, to have equal rights. But that's the small problem. To go or not to go to the army, the problem is a lot of undermining Israel, textbooks. There was a survey in the Haifa University, 43% of the Israeli Arabs don't recognize the state of Israel as the Jewish state and deny the Holocaust. And a lot of hostile activities, which is not here the time to speak about. Yes, there's many questions.
Yeah, somebody mentioned your Barak before, and I want to ask you about our Barak. most of the Jewish people in the United States voted for Barak.
Yeah.
But what is the sentiment among the settlers or among the Israelis? No, I like settlers.
You're backwards.
Perhaps.
So what is the question?
The question is, what is the sentiment in Israel about our current administration and how they will deal with Israel? Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, what is the feeling?
So, number one, if many Jews voted for Barack Obama, I think it is upon them to ask him and demand from him not to forsake Israel. That is them that choose. Maybe they are for a Palestinian state, maybe they are for dangers on Israel, I don't know.
What is the feeling in Israel?
But in Israel, listen, it is the vote of the Americans. We are not intervening in those decisions. For us, a president of the United States is a friend or not according to his actions. If he is pressing suddenly, in a few months, after 15 years of so many experiences, after so many terror, like this, two states, and that's it, and he's pressing without considering the democracy in Israel even, so he's not a friend. What can I tell you?
Well, Hillary Clinton has said she wants two states in Israel.
said it today.
Okay. Listen, it's the Palestinian state, and I haven't got the time. I'm sure that this crowd understands that the Palestinian state is the greatest danger to the existence of Israel. And when it's a question of to be or not to be, Israel will say no. And it's not only Israel. We have no partner that even wants a Palestinian state. They want to annihilate Israel. A Palestinian state could have been established before the Six-Day War. They had all these areas. In the textbooks, they never speak about Dumim. They speak about Tel Aviv. And if I was Benjamin Netanyahu meeting Obama, I would have said, listen, we all want peace. But the first step, I would like to see Abu Mazen change the map in his office. The first step, I would like to see the textbooks that are every day repeated and the media speaking about killing and becoming a suicide bomber and the training of the kids. Before that, that's my condition, to speak. I'm not saying a state or not, but to speak. I want to see an intention of peace. This is what I would have done if I would have been with Benjamin Netanyahu. Without speaking about the solution, only to see the intention of peace. And why peace means erasing Jewish life. When we're speaking about the settlement issue, if we're speaking about peace, why the equation of peace is something you call peace and wiping out all the Jews. We started to be accustomed to this equation. Somebody has to speak about this point. Somebody who didn't yet...
yeah, how much... You can't build, but how much land do you have?
To build?
Potential, that you said, belongs to Dumim. How much land does the Dumim offer?
Dumim, all this is the jurisdiction of Dumim. That is ours officially by the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Planned for us to build.
How much...
But later, yeah. No, we can build 10,000 houses.
How much percentage have you built so far, and how much is left?
A lot. We have much more to build. 10,000 units we can build, and we have only 900.
Wait, you have 900 and you can build 10,000, 10 times as much?
There's a lot of room to build. That's not a problem. And also the people that want to come is not a problem. I think, Howard, we can close the... And I want to thank you all for coming. Want to thank you all for being our friend. And we opened the door to our life. Now your duty is to come and see it in life.
Okay, if you just give me 1 minute. Rafaela, I would like to thank you very much for coming and for speaking.
You and my
it was wonderful.
China.
And Shosh, I would like to thank you very much, too.
Thank you and, for being here to listen to us.
It's been very informative, and I hope you will... Well, I once visited Kedumim, actually, when Adat Yisharun and Beth Jacob had a tour there, and I'm very glad to have done so.
And the Faithful family were in Kedumim, and Rabbi Wongelenter
here, yes, and the couple here, and the couple, and the...
So you must come and see
few the... people, the development, change.
Yeah.
And I want to say that as far as the political action... Please join ZOA. We need more members. We need to have a stronger voice. We are working on these issues in the United States. The ZOA National Office is constantly on the lookout for what's going on, constantly issuing press releases. We have a lobbying day once a year. It actually was a couple of months ago this year. So please... Join the OA. We need to have a stronger voice, especially at this time.
Yeah.
There are forms
absolutely
on the table. or you can go to ZOA.org, you can go to SDZOA.org and find a form for joining. And thank you, everybody. We don't have your name, address, and email control, so please get it on one of those clipboards so that we can still have you.
We are going to, you know,
last time we signed it.
It was amazing. The rabbi said,